Hey everybody, Jamie Kelly here. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Season 3 of the Approximate Podcast. Be sure to join our Patreon for only $5 a month to see all of Season 3's episodes in full HD video. That's patreon.com/approximatepodcast. If you're already a patron, thank you so much for your support. And to everyone who's tuned in, we love you all. And now, on with the show. Kitty! Fucking stop it! God damn it. Fucking cat. Yeah, you. Oi. Scrapple. Stop it. All right, cut. We're done. Fucking cat. God damn it. God damn it, Jamie Castles. How you doing?
Not bad. How about yourself?
Doing fucking fantastic. And with you, you brought Venus Sunshine.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very good. I don't know you guys from Adam.
They're an item and we couldn't have
I gotta
them.
Be fair. I know them from the internet. And this is the first time we've actually met. And to be very fair, Jamie, that sounds so weird. I say Jamie, I feel like I'm referring to myself.
You can call me Cal.
But you're Jamie with a Y.
Yeah.
you say we met at an industry party, right?
Well, ish. It was like planning for an industry party. I think it was the night before. I met you over I think it was the day before your birthday last year.
Yeah. So it's been like a year, and I've only had like fleeting glimpses of, like, I recognize your name.
Oh, thank you.
On the internet. So you're doing something right.
Yeah. all my, like, attention-whoring self is working.
I got to know right away, like, what brings you to us?
So I was actually going to be getting into this when I was 18, because I was one of those people that, like, turned 18 when they were still in high school, and I thought, like, you know, it'd be a great idea. Let me shoot some applications over to some sites and see if I can get in this while I'm still in high school. That'll be something to either piss off my parents or do something that I enjoy, because I was a chronic masturbator, and, like, I figured that, you know what, it's either let's chase some aspirations in academia or something and do that, or let's see how far porn goes. But if I would have done that, I probably would have jeopardized my relationship at the time, because we were just teenagers then, me and my partner who I'm doing this podcast with right now. And teenagers are hot-headed, and at that point, we could just kind of don't know what we're doing, but we just do it with a lot of passion. I'm kind of glad I didn't do that, because then I would have had to transition on cam, and I wouldn't want to do that. But yeah, I've been kind of more or less adjacent to the industry, and again, just that whole always jerking off and always watching porn.
How long have you been in the industry, writ large?
It's going to be 2 years in December.
And you're coming to it from, like, the point of view of a fan? Is that what I'm hearing?
Not necessarily, no.
You say you're a chronic masturbator. It's like you were drawn to the industry because of, did you want to be the people that you always jerked off to? Was it that kind of thing?
Honestly, kind of, yeah. But at the same time, I always approached it from a business standpoint as well, too. I was just like, clearly, you got to make your money. You could be a fan as much as you want, but at the end of the day, you have to have a job to pay the bills.
Yeah. Sex work is very much about survival.
Yeah, it's that second word there, work.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And that a lot of people generally tend to forget, especially a lot of the young people that tend to ask me, oh, it's so hot, how do you get into the business? And like, well, do you really want to? Are you going to put in the work, or are you just kind of more so wanting to do it for thrills?
You're going to have that initial spark of like, oh, God, I want to be that person on the camera. I want to be doing all the things. But when you get in it, you have to take it for the workhorse that it is, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, frankly, I always approach it that way with most of the stuff that I do, if I actually have a passion for it, at least. But
yeah.
Otherwise, I mean, if you're in corporate America, just don't kill yourself for that and just like, find the shortcuts, people.
Yeah.
What was the impetus that brought you into this business? Like, who did you hit up, and why did you hit them up? Like, what was in your, like, heart that made you, like transfer from fan to, I want to be the thing?
Yeah, how'd you get your start?
Mainly, I hate to say this, because a lot of people are going to, don't follow my lead, people, make your own decisions. It was as a result of just, like, of a major breakthrough, and just, like, it was honestly just, I could trace it back to a mushroom trip at one point. We're just like, oh fuck, well, we only have this one life as far as we know. I don't want to live it in regret. I don't want to be in a situation like, what if I just took that shot? What if I just did that? I don't want to live with that what if. I want to just actually say, cross it off the list. Gave it the best shot that I could. And if I fail, I fail. If I succeed, I'm going to succeed. But if you ask anybody, you usually have to fire me or push me out the door because I don't like quitting.
I always say that. I'd rather be on my deathbed being like, instead of being like, I wish I would have done that. Probably shouldn't have done that.
Well, it's a good Chris Porter joke. It was like, oh, damn, poor grandpa. He didn't even get to. No, wait, no, he did it all. He even did all the drugs he wanted to. All
right. Nice.
Before you made this decision to, quote unquote, cross over, what were you doing before that? Like, what was your work experience?
So officially, and let's go ahead and put it out there. No, I'm just kidding. I was working for a Fortune 100 company, mainly doing PI work for them on the insurance side of things. So I was catching people. They were trying to commit insurance fraud. I was investigating accidents, also determining who was at fault. Sorry, people, sometimes for telling you no. And I kind of hated that line of work because it was a business of me telling people no all the time and me making people upset. And frankly, on some days telling people, no, I'm sorry, we can't pay for your mangled son's funeral. You get nothing. So I'd much rather wanted to be in the business of making people happy because I'd imagine nobody jerks off angrily and comes angrily. Well, maybe.
Be surprised.
Maybe. There's some kinks out there. I work with a dominatrix back home in Dallas, so thank you, Empress Misty, for that. But I just wanted to be in the business of just pleasure and doing something that honestly made me feel happy. So
okay, so did you find that there was like, life can be better, and it's such a weird thing. Like, it sounds like the job that you just described there was something to be made of it. It sounded like a viable professional thing where you could like make a lot of money. Like, I come from a point where like I just had like 30 different Joe jobs over the course of 10 years and I tripped backwards into sex work, which was my salvation. Did tripping backwards into, or maybe even tripping forwards into sex work, feel like a salvation? Did it feel like it was something different than what you were accustomed to?
Honestly, you can ask my partner who's been with me through the whole journey for the most part. She could kind of tell like the overall shift in tone for my demeanor and my psyche. Like, working at that corporate job was killing my soul. The money's good, the benefits are good, whatever, all that good stuff. But I come from a hyper poor background and I literally grew up in a third world country for a good chunk of my life as well. So money isn't everything. What really meant a lot to me, the moments were the camaraderie, the good moments that generally didn't revolve around like fortunes or anything, just a good hang and the good times. And those things are priceless. And even having to come out of pocket because living in the Midwest and having to start your name in porn kind of involves you putting yourself out there as your own business, and you kind of have to eat the expense sometimes on some of these trips. But inevitably, if you put in the work, it pays off for you right away. You have to put in the work, though. You have to be consistent at what you do.
Okay, so I love all of this, but what you did was you passed the baton over to somebody we haven't heard from yet. Please, honey, get on the mic and talk. speak to what Jamie said.
Yeah, I was just about to say, like, y'all been together 16 years, so I'd like to know first, did y'all start the industry together?
No, that was mostly me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
She started first.
Okay, and she brought you into it? Or?
So I always hate to say that, like, I drag somebody in, but go for it.
No, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to say that she dragged me in, but I know she, because for me, you know, I've been working, you know, jobs here and there. So I was never consistent other than this job that I was in for like 10 years. And I wasn't happy. And so I know she kind of like said like, hey, like, you know, why don't you like, you know, kind of like start, or have you like, you know, kind of thought about it, you know, something like that. It's like, but she didn't like really like drag me in or like kind of like, you know, push me in.
No coercion there.
Yeah. well, we've been together for a long time. So whenever she started first, like, I was kind of just like, you know, her supporter, obviously. And, but yeah, I mean, I would just support her in what she did. I mean, it was, for me, it was almost a lot because, you know, she came out, and then from coming out, she's like, oh, well, I want to do, you know, this type of work. And I was like, okay. But, you know, for me, it's just like, are you going to be safe? You know, like, because, I mean, I didn't know anything about the industry, of course. So I always worry about her safety, too, because she is a trans woman. I didn't know how the industry was going to be, you know, towards her. Like, I didn't know about, like, you know, like, the whole, like, queer scene, in a sense. So, absolutely. Yeah, so I think the more that she did it, I was like, okay, like, I'm kind of, like, learning more about it. And I think she's, you know, doing the right things, and she's being safe. And so, you know, I just kind of still are, well, I still am her number one supporter.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Yeah. So, like, then you just, at some point during that, you made the decision to, well, I want to start doing this too.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Awesome. So how did that come about? Just, you know, did y'all shoot together at first, or did you start doing?
Yeah, we did do one scene. It was like the threesome scene, right?
Yeah. We was with a close friend of ours back home. It was also a performer. The idea came up of just like, hey, want to do a three-way in regards to like get a scene out of the way with locals. And the idea came about just, do you want to get involved? No worries if you don't. We can always find another partner. And it just kind of naturally happened. At that point, she just kind of created all of her accounts and just has been on it and just steady producing.
Did you already like have an idea about getting into this line of work, or was it predicated off of your relationship with Jamie?
It was basically from my relationship with Jamie, because I grew up in a very like strict household. So I was like never taught about sex. You know, we never had the sex talk. It was just like, just don't do it because you'll get pregnant, you know? So I was very repressed. I didn't know like the penis went inside the vagina. Like for me, I thought it was just like rubbing.
Oh, wow.
Like I was like, you get pregnant from rubbing? Like, oh, wow. You know, like I didn't understand. So they never had that conversation with me. But yet, you know, like my grandma, she got pregnant at like 16, 15. Then my mom got pregnant at 15, 16. And so then I think from me being the oldest, they thought I was going to do the same thing since I had met Jamie in high school, basically like our freshman year. So I think they were worried about it, but they still didn't talk to me about it. It's almost like they didn't want me to have a relationship and just stick with school. Yeah. So I mean, you see clips sometimes on the internet about porn and stuff, but like for me, like I just never thought it was like, you know, insertion. Like I didn't know about that, because usually the clips that come out, it's just nothing.
Kind of a failure of the sex education system there, for sure.
Thank you, Texas.
Yeah,
fuck.
Well, I mean,
fucking Texas.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember having the fifth grade talk, you know, about, you know, periods and
the birds and the bees,
the diagrams somewhat, that they show you that they don't explain shit to you.
Well, yeah, you separate the girls and the boys.
Yeah,
you know, and then funny enough,
nothing queer, especially.
Oh no, no, I feel like I knew about like, you know, queer people. But, you know, it never bothered me. Like, I'm not like, ew, gay people or anything. I'm just like,
they're
living, you know, their life, you know?
So that wasn't part of the repression in your household? Like, it wasn't like, well, I don't know, queerphobic, homophobic, or whatever to add to the sexual repression? Or
not openly?
I feel like we never talked about queer people. Like, if that did come up, it was just like, you know, they live their life as long as they don't bring it onto my household type of thing.
Yeah. Sounds like. Yeah.
But like, I mean, my grandma, she was partying in her 70s in LA. So she knew about like, you know, like,
oh yeah,
all the, you know, trans people, and you know, she used to party with them too, but it's just like
70s in LA, damn sure did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so she, you know, she would party with everybody, you know, she didn't care as long as you partied. But like,
grandma,
you know,
party grandma.
Yeah. So I mean, but like she never like talked to us about it in a sense.
It's kind of funny when you deal with that, because like you have parents that grew up in like the most fun eras. Like my dad was a 60s child and like traveled around the country a bit. But when I came out, he didn't say anything outright, but like I could tell a couple of those birthday pictures, he was looking at me funny. But inevitably, like I always make the joke that like me coming out made my dad die, because immediately within like that year, like he died 1 month after we celebrated our birthdays, because ours were like a week apart. But that's just a horrible, morbid joke, just because our family dealt with too much death. But I later found out from my mom that he was actually very accepting. It's just that he didn't know how to say it or how to express it. So
it was maybe, it sounds like maybe too much too soon.
Probably, because I didn't really come out to them as like trans or anything like right away, until it was like a little bit too much to hide. And just like, you got boobs there, kid. What's going on? You're going through another puberty. Why do you look like you're 10 years younger? You're about to be 30 in a few years. And
estrogen.
I kind of had to come clean with them and was like, well, I don't live here anymore. And frankly, it's because I didn't want to have to go through the uncomfortability of this possibly. But I found out that they were accepting. I mean, they know that I do porn and everything too. But yeah, they just suck at talking about it to their kids.
Yes, especially like Hispanic households.
I was about to ask. I mean, that's kind of I imagine that's kind of a culture thing, because talking to your kids about, you know, this stuff, I'm sure is, I don't have kids or whatever, so I'm sure it's very hard for anybody who's doing it, and kind of probably feels a little awkward. But just the culture of being Hispanic.
Stephanie, as you trip along your words.
I am tripping along my words.
Leave it to me
to make
a more succinct question.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. You're fine. I love it. It's charming as fuck.
Yeah. We're going to cut all this out.
Oh, no. Leave it in.
Yeah.
I also wanted to ask is, do you feel like conversation between you and your family in a Hispanic, Latino household, is it like everybody just kind of is quiet? You can't talk about inner things? Is it like a machismo thing?
No.
What is the deal?
Well, at least not in my household. Everybody can't shut the fuck up. And I'm kind of the worst one at it. At least in my case. Probably I'm not the best stereotype for Hispanics, because I'm like first generation American on my mom's side. And both of my... I'm essentially a trauma baby. Like my dad lost his first wife and my mom lost her first husband, and they both essentially met in the ICU unit. So 9 months later, here comes me, and my father's side of the family absolutely hates my guts because they felt like my mom replaced their mom. And as a result, I'm like that little representation of that at all times. But funny enough, I was like the most successful kid from both sides of my family. And I just stumbled onto that, just dumb luck, frankly.
I don't mean to interrupt, but I absolutely do mean to interrupt. So do you feel like there's a lot of contention between you and your family, not because of the trans thing, but because of other instances?
Oh, yeah, abso-fucking-lutely. Yeah.
Did the trans thing, like, fuck things up even more, or was it a non-issue at that point?
Kind of, because my family asked me to speak at my father's funeral. And I rarely see my family from time to time, aside from when it was like my dad's festivities, holidays, whatever it might be. And they haven't seen me in about 3 years because of COVID and things like that. So here comes their little brother, and looking hyper femme in a suit, dressed in black, and I can't necessarily hide it well. And yeah. I was also scolding them because they went against my father's last wish and giving him a funeral. We didn't want that fucking shit, but they paid for it. But that's probably another point. But
you see, is it like a waste of like resources or money or something?
My immediate family's of the belief donate the fucking body to science. Get the ashes back 3 months later. Don't worry about it. The time to mourn was the day that they died. And putting somebody in a fucking box in the ground is just a waste of space and a waste of money. Crying about it later also doesn't mean shit. We dealt with so much death to the point where we had basically actual death pools in the family of who was next.
Damn.
But it wasn't a big deal, at least for my immediate family. And we were kind of ready for it. My dad was going to dialysis like 4 to 5 times a week. And he was in and out of the emergency room like every couple months. So we knew that the time was coming. We just didn't know exactly when. I just have like all the respect for my dad to pull his oxygen mask in the ICU unit because he just self-checked out.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool. That's so cool.
I was just like,
to know it.
Wait to
not to make light of that situation.
No. You're by all means, I'm the person to make light of it with. Anybody else would probably be crying and stuff. What I did the day that my father died was shoot my first Groovy scene.
What a thing. Jeez, yeah. What a confluence of circumstances.
I told Omar about it afterwards. He's like, so what you been up to, Jamie? I was just at the over at Medical City, just like signing some paperwork for my dead dad. Like, excuse me? Yeah, my dad died earlier today. So how much am I getting paid?
The sense of autonomy and compartmentalization there. Wow.
That is a lot. How do you feel about what you just said?
Pretty fucking funny. I know my dad would have been laughing at it.
Fucking awesome.
Ah, jeezy flips.
I didn't know if I was supposed to laugh or be
laughing is the appropriate response. I'm smirking right now.
Oh no, you're on camera. We can all see.
Hey, yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, absolutely.
Like, man, you can talk to anybody that knows me. Like, granted, like, I feel like the few deaths that hit me a little bit harder is like my father, because it's just like, ah, shit, I can't have a hot dog and a beer with somebody on the 4th of July anymore. Or like watch the same movie 50 times with him, because that's what old guys do, like my dad. And probably pets for the most part. Like, that, those are the ones that hurt me more than family. It was like, after losing a couple sisters, cousins, and like aunts and grandparents, just like, oh well.
Wow. Yeah.
Stephanie.
Huh.
Do you know where to go to from here? Like, what do we say?
Well, we're going to pivot.
We're going to have to pivot.
So anyways, after that situation, I just kept on going on with my life at that point and just like realizing my father's mortality was more of a sign that like, make it fucking worth it, because he lived up to be 79 years old. And all he did was just break his back for his family, which respectable. And he took care of my half brothers and sisters who weren't really his legitimate kids just because he married my mom and he raised them just like they were his own. But he never did anything for himself. He never had any fun. He never really traveled for fun. It was just always to go work in a farm somewhere. So he wanted everything for me and he wanted me to enjoy my life. That was kind of more so the things that we always used to talk about in terms of mortality also. Live your fucking life. Don't wait. Just go. And honestly, that's kind of what fueled it, because I even told my mom, my brothers, and my sisters when we were in the hospital, just like, so I got an email earlier today that I got to go do a shoot. And they were just like, oh, you got to go do it.
I actually kind of identify with that, actually, because when my dad passed in 2010.
I'm glad one of us does.
Yeah. Well, hey.
Hey, let's talk about her dad and that funny story in a bit. But
we can go to that. I just wanted to share a bit of empathy with you there, because when my dad passed in 2010, I had already been doing covert research on, this is when I started learning the words of, you know, transgender and transsexual and HRT and all that shit like that, and I started doing my research and stuff, you know, coverted, because I didn't want anybody to know and whatnot, and my dad never actually got to meet me as like the woman I am or the lady I am or whatever. Dad in 2010, hospice, cirrhosis and hepatitis. I ended up asking him, because I was still in like the running stage. I'm like, you know, I can't do that thing. Even though I'm doing research on it, it's just something I'm gonna have to keep in my mind forever. was like, hey, Dad, why don't you ever call me your son, like you do Brady or whatever.
Which is your brother.
My brother's
your older brother.
Yeah. So I asked, like, Dad, like, why don't you ever call me like your son, like you do my older brother? He was like, well, I don't know. Like, I didn't think you would want it. And I was like, what do you think that means at the time? Because he always was going to be like kiddo and puthead and stuff like that. never like gendered terms for the most part. And then he actually said, like, I don't know, daughter. I was like, what? I was like, so I felt like he like, what kind of knew, just like, I don't know, kismetly. I don't know if it's called that. Kind of tearing up a little bit.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Like, the tears come, like, years later, oddly. Not the moment of.
Oh, they came. They came that moment, too. But I was also, like, in shock, you know? But it's funny, though, because after he passed away, I was like, hold on. Life is short. And if I'm going to be fucking happy, I can't continue down this road that I was on. So I wouldn't say that was my egg-cracking moment, but I would say that was, like, the moment when I started investing on, like, what direction I'm really going to go. Not just doing the research, but, like, how to put this in motion. So I share that same drive with you after you lose somebody and seeing how short life was, because he passed away at 59, which is still relatively young to pass away, right? If I make it there, I don't know. I don't know. I figured I'd be dead by now, especially being a trans sex worker.
Oh, same. And I mean, it's not all that bad, frankly. I mean, I'm coming from somebody that's very close to mortality and death and seeing death. And also, my family had the very, very shitty way of trying to teach me how to swim, where I ended up drowning probably more than 6 times. I lost count after 6, really.
Did they just throw you in the pool?
Yeah, 100%.
Son of a bitch.
And they're just like, oh, you'll get it this time. Like, no. And just black out and wake up like, huh, that was nice. Like, how long was I out this time? Like, about 5 minutes. Oh, okay.
God damn it. I got a drowning story, too. Fuck. How much should we identify together?
Well, I still can't swim, for one. So if you ever want to get rid of me, just push me on the deep end, and I'll, yeah, whatever.
So no water bondage with you.
Okay. Oh, no. I've done that. Like, bring on the, what's it called? The waterboarding. There we go. And water sports in general.
Here's what I'm hearing. Guys, here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that parents are awful.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yeah, it's just fucking awful.
That's what therapy is usually for.
Aunts and uncles generally solve that. Sometimes grandparents, too. They kind of realize, like, oh, fuck, I messed up with my kids. Time to help out with the grandkids.
Different generations, right? They kind of, I feel like that's what therapy was based off of.
Yeah, it's always your mom. It's always your dad. It's always, like, you want to fuck your mom or you want to fuck your dad, according to Freud.
How much did your parents fuck you up, and how much do you have to change that?
And how much do you have to pay to fix it?
See, exactly. I'm like a psych. I'm a psych major, and I'm pre-law. So, like, all that shit, whenever I knew all the tricks and everything to start my HRT quick, to the point where I was just like, fuck, gotta do it. All right, day one, go to the therapist, get the note, go to the doctor, do day one, bang, meds.
So it's endocrinologist with you to start the HRT?
Yeah, exactly. And I knew all the insurance loopholes because I worked in the industry for that that point. So I was just like, all right, time to fast track this shit and make up for lost time. But
nice. Use boof in the progesterone.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I was like, I need progesterone. Well, we need to put you on the meds for a few months. No, I need progesterone. We're gonna put you on the meds for a few months, and at these low dosages, like, I'm gonna take more than you're gonna recommend, because based on this, like, okay, fine, we're gonna give you progesterone.
Right. And as you say that, I'm gonna tend to your needs. I'm gonna light your cigarette there, because you need it. There you go.
Oh, that's hot. There you go.
There you are.
I appreciate that. But yeah, that's just, parents generally do suck quite a bit, and they don't realize it, because it's that old phrasing, well, you don't know how hard parenting is. Like, granted, I'm not a parent and I'm not a pilot either, but if I see a pilot crash into a house, I could say that that's a bad pilot, much like I could say that you're a bad parent.
Yeah, there you go. I always call it a traditional generational trauma. And that's what we're all suffering from. That's what we all go to fucking therapy for. That's what we're all trying to figure out. It's what all fucks us up.
Well, funny enough, like I wasn't scared of my parents knowing about me, because it's always funny at this point, like the amount of trauma that my family's been through, nothing is going to get to them. It's like, mom, dad, I'm bi. Oh, okay, we kind of knew. Mom, dad, I'm trans. Oh, that good for you. Mom, dad, I'm doing porn. Okay, yeah, that's why they take a quick second.
So
for that
all
one.
Of those things were so, again, we're talking to people. I know a large amount of our audiences are folks that are just starting out or are just getting into the business or are in the midst of dealing with family life in accordance with their transition. And you're saying, from your perspective, and maybe folks will identify with this, being trans and opening up and sexuality and stuff, that was the least of your concerns because there was so much other stuff going on. Do you feel like you come from, is your family like liberal?
No. Well, like we're sort of, the best way that I could describe it is they're anarchists. They just kind of don't, well, not even anarchists. What's the word? Nihilist. In a way, because they just don't give a shit. Where it's just like, I'm not gonna fucking vote for that piece of shit. Nothing's gonna happen this time. And they never voted. They never have any political ideations. We were religious at some point, but when my brother got hooked on heroin and I was babysitting him, and the church didn't want to help us out, we were Jehovah's Witnesses, by the way. they didn't want to help us out, so my mom just abandoned them. And I was like, it's about fucking time. You didn't realize this shit, that they weren't going to help us out. They're just only going to want to take money from you. But nonetheless, like,
I kind of want to ask, did you, because you brought up a really interesting point and we haven't heard this yet. Did you see your parents going through like an apostate, like type of situation? Like, was it like ingrained in them and they had to, because Jehovah's Witnesses kind of, you know, strict.
They are. Like, I didn't really have a birthday party or any Christmas celebrations or any celebrations really. And like, that really fucking sucked as a child. Like that was my trauma. Just like seeing all of my classmates just like, oh, happy birthday, happy Christmas. Let's go have fun for Halloween.
You're like, what are those?
No, I knew what they were. Because we watched the movies and everything. My dad was like a big movie buff. So like, we were just always watching shit like, oh yeah, there's Home Alone, the thing that we can't celebrate.
Son of a bitch.
Fuck. But
let's put on these fucking ties and go door to door.
Yeah, we did that for a hot second until like I just made every single excuse to like get out of it. That's when I found out that I can like regurgitate on like command and just like fucking throw up, and I developed a bad like bulimic habit with it.
That's a whole different story. Damn.
Yeah. It was just like when I found out that like if you throw up in school, you'll immediately get sent home. Like, well, fuck, I got to make this happen. But like, I fucking hated growing up with that because they do brainwash you with that.
So there was like a period where y'all had to adjust to like,
yeah,
in reality or common life or whatever.
Yeah, and back to like Jamie Kelly's question, I feel like the more trauma that people experience, the less of a shit that they kind of give about like the smaller problems in life. And the whole apostate thing that you were mentioning, Stephanie, kind of, but not really. We just kind of live by the principle of like, don't be a dick.
Fucking great principle.
It's kind of the only principle.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Like me and my older brother, while as fucked up as we are, if we see somebody that we can help out, even if we don't have much, we'll help out. And it was my brother's 10 times more humble than I am in that case, because I honestly think of the world of him, but even though with his problems and everything, but he helps out so many people that he's met through the system, being incarcerated or being through rehab and such. And he was one of the first of my siblings to just like honestly just call me his sister, and
it's beautiful.
It's great, and we just occasionally fuck around about me doing trans porn, and just like how I'm gonna ruin porn for him because I'm gonna be working with so many cis women. Well, am working with so many cis women at this point.
You're limiting his options.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, just you wait, I'm coming for you.
Yeah, you're gonna be seeing my face pretty soon. You're gonna get a limper.
Oh boy.
But we always fuck with each other to that degree, and I feel sorry for a lot of people that I see in the industry or just that are in the queer world that are coming out, because their parents are so fucking ignorant to the point of like, you're only pushing your kid away And come your deathbed, you're going to be alone in the press and wondering where did you screw up? And it was because of that.
And where's going to be your fucking, like, you know, what you pushed him away for then? Like, where's going to be the situation that you were praying to and where, you know?
And no parent likes to be told wrong or to be teached or coached or to, like, be corrected on their behavior. But it's going to fucking happen. And, I mean, I guess maybe it was a lot more easier for me because my parents gave up on beating me up when I started beating them up and when they realized that I was a bit of a masochist, too.
Wow.
I was like,
as they're
hitting me and slapping me and punching me and like just whipping me with the belt, I'm just laughing at them because that shit doesn't hurt. It actually felt good. I'm like, fucking bring it on.
Did you get in a lot of fights in school?
Surprisingly, no. People were intimidated by my little tiny 5 foot self, like 5 foot five self. I guess they maybe knew or they just didn't want to talk to the weird kid.
Maybe. So you were the secluded. You didn't have a big mouth. You weren't.
I was like, I had a big mouth, and at times people did want to beat me up, but then I probably out-crazied them to the point where they didn't want to beat me up, and they probably knew of my brother that was involved with drugs and involved with selling drugs at the time, and they're just like, I kind of don't want any part of that, maybe.
You were the bigger monster in that scenario.
Exactly. I'm like, listen, if you fuck with me, I might be tinier and smaller than you, but you don't want to know what I'm going to do to get even with you.
You don't fight fair.
No, you never do. There's no such thing as a fair fight.
Right.
I was a bouncer at one point.
In this story, I'm the monster. Don't fuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get that.
Yeah. I'm just like, hey, listen, I got less to lose than you. Do you really want to go down this path?
Yeah, you don't. You don't even know who you're dealing with. Oh my God, I respect that. I love that.
I developed that skin as I grew up. I kind of was secluded and stuck to my own like group and stuff, and of course tried to please people by not presenting the way I wanted to, or you know, like.
Oh, I was the ultimate people pleaser for sure. Like as much as I like to fuck around with people, that was like my biggest weakness. I just always wanted to make and keep people happy, even up to this day to a degree.
Yeah, I'm still kind of trying to shed that people pleaser thing.
If you come from the kind of trauma that makes you a people pleaser, it's really easy to like miscombobulate what it is to be a decent person rather than a people pleaser. And it takes a lot of work, a lot of internal work to figure out the difference between the two. Because it's so easy to say, well, I just want to do the best for everybody. I want to be a best man. I want to say yes to everything. And it's at your own expense. And that's being a people pleaser. And you put yourself in really shitty positions.
I'm actually reaping some of the repercussions from that today, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit sore. Took 3 scenes yesterday, right?
No, not even that. So this is news, and I might as well just say it to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
I was booking the scenes for Trans Roommates and Trans Midnight. However, saying yes to everything that comes along your way, not the best idea, people. I found out that's not my strength. I'm good at talking to people. I'm good at getting people, wrangling people, and calming people down. Yeah. But in just on top of everything else that I'm doing, probably not now. So no more. Maybe later. We'll see. I'm in good standing with everybody there.
You know, anything that's worth doing, any discipline, and it is a discipline, anything that's worth doing is a discipline. And it is like figuring out how to say no is a discipline.
100%.
You know, like being discerning is a discipline.
That is so fucking hard. And I'm like...
And it is. It is.
I'm getting used to that because you can't say yes to everybody in this industry. In life, yeah, absolutely not.
You have to learn that saying no is a part of your power.
Yeah, and that's honestly, that was the hardest part of my job previously in the corporate world, just like stamping the paper and just like, we're not going to pay you or you're not getting anything. My happiest moments were when people were able to con the system successfully, like, I knew you lied. I know you're lying, but we can't prove it. You won. Here's your money.
Learning how to be a good judge of character and then being able to set up boundaries where you can say yes or no for the right situation at the right time.
Right.
And if for those that are working on it, it may feel like the first few times where you have to say no for the right reasons, you may feel cold. You may feel like an asshole.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing it for the right reasons, and you've like you had the wherewithal to build up the character to know that I'm always saying yes and it's always bad. And you learn your lesson and you start to stand up for yourself and you start to like
develop that self-worth.
Develop boundaries, yeah. Right. Self-worth.
Yeah.
It's always gonna feel a little bit shitty. If you're not used to being like, if you come from trauma and you don't know how to be, what's the good word?
Assertive?
That's a very good word.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know how to be assertive and you're like dipping your toe into it, it can feel really shitty.
Yeah.
And you have to learn from that and realize that, oh, wait, I felt like an asshole when I establish a boundary, but it turned out to be the right thing. And then you start to learn from that and you start to keep repeating that pattern. But if you're always a yes person, if you're always a people pleaser, it gets you nowhere. It gets you nowhere. Yet you just wind up putting layers and layers and layers.
You slow yourself.
Like people taking advantage of you.
You burn your candle at both ends.
At both ends, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like that's been me with family. Like, I've always been, like, wanting to please them and wanting to do the right thing. Especially, like, since I kind of work with my family company, like, off of the side, I have to deal with, like, the family company, but also have to deal with the family problems. And it's like, at first I was like, okay, I'll give you maybe some advice. Maybe I shouldn't be the one giving you marriage advice. Maybe I shouldn't be giving you womanly advice on how to, like, I don't know, respect yourself or have, you know, some type of dignity within yourself. I don't want to hear about my mom and my stepdad's problems. Like, you know, like, that's too much already. I'm like,
you didn't ask for that.
Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, look, I'm dealing with my relationship. You deal with your relationship because I know you're not going to want to help me with my relationship.
I don't mean to sound like a jerk, but it sounds like they're so busy still growing up that they didn't even have the appropriate lessons to teach you so that you can handle your own private stuff. Am I wrong in saying that?
No.
Yeah, they're like, they definitely have arrested development on their situation.
Arrested development. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's happened more often than not on this podcast with the guests that we've had. The parental things that we all have to deal with, it seems like there's so much arrested development from the top down, from the parents to the kids, that we were never taught, like, lessons about how to live a life. And we find that we have to make it up on our own. And then they're old, the parents, and they're still making old mistakes. And we think we're doing a little bit better. And then we have to do this thing where, like, we weigh our, like, judgments and think that we're doing better, even though we're kind of fucked up, yeah. And weighed against what our parents' inequities are. And then as soon as we involve them in our lives,
they start involving
their
parents.
They have an opinion.
Well, like, the thing is, like, my grandma, she grew up with, like, 15 siblings. So, like, where did my great-grandparents, you know, find the time to talk to each individual child?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and have that
one-on-one. Time with,
yeah, that one-on-one when you're too busy popping kids out, you know? Obviously, my grandma and her siblings getting pregnant at a young age, and then them having to deal with, you know, their problems with, like, whatever, men or, you know, life in general. And then when it comes to raising their kids, well, they go back to, like, well, my mom and dad never had a one-on-one with me. So, you know, just send them off to school. They'll learn everything there. Because my mom still has that mindset where they'll learn everything in school.
Life lessons are taught through living, right?
Yeah, and I'm just like, no. Like, no. Like, they teach you.
Give me a preface, mom.
Like, basic-ass math.
Maybe right. There's, you know? In a professional environment, there are times to delegate. not parenting. You don't delegate. You gotta be there for your kids.
Which I think this is like the first time that people are realizing that as a civilization, because we, like, for the most part, there's always been a crisis or just like people are consumed with work. Do you have latchkey kids, or you immediately are like in a world war conflict, or the fucking world economy is so shit that like everybody's just working at the age of 7. So like this is like the first time that humanity's probably had a time to like realize, oh my God, we do so much wrong.
We fucked it up. How do we get back to any kind of resemblance of good?
Yeah.
Okay, so we met yesterday. We did a scene. I filmed it for y'all with Penny. Penny Petals, we're filming a scene for you and...
Cardi Falcone and Luna Nix and myself and Venus Sunshine.
Yeah, and it was an orgy scene. And y'all two are a couple. And I just want to hear first point of view from both of y'all.
Was it hard to navigate interpersonally with your relationship?
Absolutely not. At least not for me. Yeah. No, I mean, we've been through it all, mostly more than most married couples at this point, considering that we've been together since 14.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like at this point it was just like, let's have fun, or let's get the work out of the way. And if we can have some fun, let's have some fun. If not, let's just get that scene done and see where that goes. And we can hopefully enjoy the rest of the day and look forward to that first meal of the day.
Okay, not to press it too far, but just for the sake of our listening audience to put like a bow on it. Y'all have been together so long that jealousy or envy in a situation like an orgy scene together with a bunch of other people, it's not a thing.
For a scene, no. Granted, when we've had fun outside of the relationship, it's very common for somebody to feel like a third wheel in a threesome or in like a group sex scenario.
That's why I brought it up, because I wanted to ask, like, did y'all have... any kind of swinging prior to getting in the industry together, well, you know, having sex together in the industry with other people?
Not prior to getting into the industry. Like, occasionally you met somebody that clicks in the group or that, like, lives close by, and then, like, all of a sudden we just end up in the bedroom. That doesn't happen all the time, by the way, people. That's just rare instances. Don't give your expectations, like, all the way up. Like, just kill that off. But it's...
Put them right.
As rare as that is... It is very common for somebody to feel very third wheel-y. Not to necessarily name names. That's happened to me. That's happened to her. There is some jealousy there. There is some moments. We do still get into plenty of fights. But we kind of learn to just navigate through them and resolve our issues.
Do you think, I don't know if you guys already do this, but from 18 years in the business, as a sex worker, as a person, would it be wise to just like, put your foot on the ground and compartmentalize and maybe remove any of those negative feelings by saying, this is business. This is our personal life.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
We always do that. Like, okay, so we're doing, or like if she's doing a scene or if I'm doing a scene, it's like, obviously this is business. This is not personal. And, you know, we just get the work done.
Yeah. I will say that to people that are couples in this industry, realize that this is all work. Maybe... If things are ever okay, if you're ever able to go to an open set and check it out and you're not in the industry with somebody that is, you'll see firsthand that it's very, very just it's just separate from personal life.
It's professional. People doing their gigs.
Once the camera starts rolling, we're working.
We're a performer.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're servicing the customer.
Exactly. We're performing there. We're putting on the act for the camera. We're trying to do the best that we can so that you can jerk off later to that. But when it's over, we shake hands, we get paid, we smile, maybe a hug, maybe get something to eat. But that's generally about it. And just like your coworkers at work, at your vanilla job, you maybe don't see them again, or you maybe see them again next time that you go to work with them.
I'm so glad that it felt that way for y'all, that it feels that way for y'all, and y'all compartmentalize it that way, because that's how it felt on set yesterday. I didn't feel any awkwardness about the couple or whoever was fucking who or whatever like that.
Well, if anything, I relate to them, because Cardi Falcone and Luna Nix are also a couple as well, and yeah. This was Luna's first time in Vegas, and this was Venus's first time in Vegas for work. You know, we got along and just had fun with it. It's very rare that you find somebody that you can click with like that, because everybody's a different person. But I will say, for the most part, if you're getting in this business, do it for the work. Separate it, personal, professional life. You might have friends there that you can invite occasionally for a dinner or whatever and stuff like that. Maybe watch a game or just watch a movie or whatever. That's fine. But just realize that that's not the bread and butter for everything.
This is the end I was waiting for.
Yes.
Because we actually do.
Segue right into the.
We do have to wrap up the podcast.
All the way right into the end. Really good there.
Three pieces of advice that you and or you could give to somebody that is up and coming in the industry. Three pieces of advice, purely from your perspective.
Vet talent. If you can, if you know friends around, if you know other performers, vet talent to make sure that you know what you're, if you're getting into something that you might have any doubts. Because if you have doubts, chances are it's probably for a good reason. And you, honey, do you have anything you want to add that you might maybe might have picked up for me or just in doing it shortly?
Like, don't think of it. This is just like a hobby in a sense. I mean, for sure, it could maybe be a hobby, but also think of it as a job, and you have to dedicate almost 24 hours of your day, you know, whether it's editing, whether it's networking, whether it's, you know, having to, you know, even buy outfits. You have to have like a career somewhat mindset of coming into the business, because it's not always fun and games.
I mean, to add on top of that as well, also realize that don't take things personal in this line of work. It's a business more than anything. And sometimes you got to realize that if things don't work out for door one, door number two and three are right there for you. And I come from a mindset of pro wrestling where on the indie side of things, it's just, if the WWE doesn't want you, work the indies, go to that promotion over there, become the indie darling, and make them regret not hiring you. if you want to be spiteful that way. But frankly, just realize that there's other options out there, and just don't take things personal. If somebody says no, that's okay. Move on to the next thing.
Always be kind and respectful.
This, I want to end on what you just said right there, because literally 99% of the time that we've had guests on and we ask for these three pieces of advice, it always comes up, be kind, be kind, be kind, be a decent human being. This is, thank you so much for that. With that being said.
We made it.
Yeah, well. Everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Approxima Podcast, and for our Patreons that are watching, thank you so much for tuning in. There's more to come. Everybody, say goodbye. Point to your cameras and say bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Find me wherever. Jamie Castle's everywhere.
Fuck yeah. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time on the Approxima Podcast.
Bye-bye.